Our next case is 13-1257, Disciplinary Counsel versus Stephen Leslie Becker. For the respondent, Mr. Leonard.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, counsel. I would like to reserve, if I could, 3 minutes at the end of my argument. I'm Robert K. Leonard. Present with me at counsel table is the respondent, Stephen Leslie Becker. We're here, of course, on a matter of discipline. I'm not here to quibble over the facts involved. As you all know, Mr. Becker self-reported, admitted violations with his self-reporting, admitted violations in his answer, admitted violations in his discovery. Those are water over the dam, I'm going to say. What the key issue is for Mr. Becker is what is the significance of his gambling addiction in terms of a mitigating factor? Each case is unique, as we know, for attorneys. There is some precedent. The only precedent that I've directly cited is the Birchnall case, but I will be referencing a couple of other cases that have been cited in other briefs that have been filed in this matter. The significance of gambling addiction is interestingly new in the sense that the guidelines are for attorney discipline were adopted just back in 2000. They were amended in 2008 to bring in mental disability type issues, including previously alcoholism and drug addiction was there, but now we look at other factors as well. And only recently has the court begun to see cases involving gambling addiction. There are very few cases nationally regarding this sort of a mitigating factor. It's so important, though, for Mr. Becker's case in that it's very clear that it wasn't just a passing problem that he had. He had a series, after 30 years of wonderful practice, a series of about 8 years where he committed the violation of using clients' funds, which I know is presumptive disbarment. So I'm fighting that issue, trying to say that indefinite suspension, next step down, definitely is appropriate, and hopefully even the court would agree that a couple of years with a year suspended would be appropriate for Mr. Becker with action to protect the public. That's the key here. The action to protect the public is if he's allowed to come back to practice, he comes back with restrictions. Those restrictions have been involved in other cases, and in Mr. Becker's case, it would require mental health professionals, Gamblers Anonymous, whatever the court determines in terms of mentoring, that sort of thing. Even though he had a wonderfully successful practice, he developed a gambling addiction. He must come back free of that to protect the public. So any leave that this court can give us for Mr. Becker to come back and practice, we recognize, and his doctor recognizes, he recognizes those restrictions have to be in place. The reason that we know Mr. Becker's situation is unique and very, it was very overbearing from his, is the size of his problem. The record will show that it didn't involve just a little gambling on some horses here and there. He unfortunately became addicted to gambling in the bigger casinos and ended up with not tens of thousands of dollars, but hundreds of thousands of dollars lost. It's in the record. It's sad. He was maintaining a good practice during that time and could cover part of it, but the record shows that he couldn't keep up with things financially. His doctor, Mr. Becker, said that led him into more problems with finances. He also has some depression involved, but basically it's a gambling addiction. What has he done about it? Has there been a continued effort to be clean? Yes, three perfect years. Since he was caught and lost his job in Lima, Ohio, where we both live, he has not gambled. He's done the best he can with his addiction. He didn't do it a traditional way with lots of money on doctors. Quite frankly, he didn't have money. The record shows that he owes the IRS considerable money. He lost his house to foreclosure. He did not have the opportunity to continue to work in small Lima or to be able to do the things that maybe he could have done during these past years other than avoid gambling and leave him in a position where with good health he can return to practice.
What is your client doing now?
What are his plans now?
No, what is he doing now? What has he been doing for the last 3 years?
For the last 3 years, he's finished out a few cases that he had from his former firm. He was an independent contractor. He brought some of those cases with him. He's just quietly finished them out, waiting for this process to end so he has some certainty on what he can do. And certainty means he's in Florida, getting back to practice, coming back to Lima perhaps, practicing in Florida. This court's decision will guide what he's going to be able to do. He would like to come back to the practice of law.
Does he have a Florida law practice?
He does not have a Florida, and he's not licensed to practice there. It didn't seem appropriate to apply for a license when he was under the problems here in Ohio.
Are finishing these cases, was that sufficient income to sustain him, or did he have outside sources of income?
No, he fortunately has a wonderful wife, and that information's in the record, too. Thurla has not only been able, with her job, to support the two of them financially, but to also, quite frankly, make sure that Mr. Becker doesn't have money to gamble. That's one of his things that he's done to avoid his problem, is not being susceptible to it. Interestingly, they went, shortly after his self-reporting, they went to Vegas on a free trip that he had earned with all his gambling, didn't gamble an iota, and she knew that he couldn't, and they've been able to successfully do that for 3 years.
Has your client engaged in any treatment since the date of this filing by the panel? In August, we have the filing of the panel's recommendations. And as you know, they're very concerned about the failure in treatment, the failure to attempt any treatment for the problem. Has there been anything that's happened since August that you can tell us about?
Not really with formal treatment. He can't afford it. He's no. But he is willing to do that and knows he'll have to do that to protect the public if he comes back to the practice.
Has your client met with anyone from the OLAP organization?
He was with that OLAP for a short period of time. He basically is self-treated, is the best way to describe it. And that's not the final answer. I recognize that. But he's been successful with what he's done in terms of living a fairly normal life, although he has some depression, obviously has an addiction that is going to have to be addressed if he comes back. But for 3 years, he's had no problems.
What restitution has been made?
Is he what?
What restitution has been made?
Restitution is interesting because restitution was made, I'm going to say, perform in the sense of as he got money, he paid back the people and the things that he did, particularly the public and his law firm without question. There is an issue in the case as to whether or not his family received all the inheritance that they should have. There's nothing in testimony from the family that they're disappointed with what's come out of this. It's something that they took care of, I'm going to say, internally. They could have testified. We volunteered to have them available by telephone if counsel wanted to ask some questions about their alleged or thought of lost inheritance. So there's no issue there. There would be no adjudication of restitution because there isn't any restitution issue in the case. So the answer is yes, he did it. It was timely in some instances and a little slow in other instances.
Do you know the amount that has been paid back to all the victims?
No, I don't. But the private clients, it was less than $5,000. The law firm only involved a few thousand dollars. That was a contractual issue. In fact, he had to instigate litigation to get his cases back, and they ended up in litigation paying him money because of the way they had treated his finances. He's paid a penalty. He's paid a penalty with his practice in Lima, et cetera. And I think that's another fairly significant factor in this case. He's paid, I'm going to say, a price with his family, too, but that's been resolved internally.
Mr. Leonard, the panel's recommendation here seems very, very strong because they're saying that the approach to controlling the problem here appears to be that avoidance of contact with money will allow, you know, no temptation. But how do you practice law without contact with money?
You don't fail
to see that.
That's why the return with the restrictions are absolutely required to protect the public. He will have money when he returns to practice. That's another thing that in the testimony from one of his own partners, his doctor, he was a wonderful practitioner. Every year he made good money. He is a good, he helped the public. He helped not only his own practice, but mentored the person that testified and had to report him, or at least testify in terms of the violations. No problem with that. Yes, if he had money 3 years ago, he might have gambled. But after self-reporting, he didn't have money, he didn't gamble, and he will continue to do that. And if he comes back to the practice, he will definitely have to be monitored, no question. Because he has a mental deficiency, illness, gambling, addiction that needs to be taken care of.
I thought the amount involved here was hundreds of thousands of dollars.
It is.
But it all hasn't been paid back. Only certain clients have been paid back.
All public clients have paid back.
What do you mean by public clients?
Non-family.
Oh, I see.
In nominal amounts. And no skeletons in the closet. Since we've finished this, nobody else has come forward and said, hey, here's a file that Mr. Becker didn't take care of, a client that he didn't serve, another client that he juggled some funds with.
So how much family money is there that's involved?
Quite a bit.
What would that be, quantified?
Quantified. With his nephew, I want to say $20,000 or $30,000 was paid back. With his aunt, close to $500,000, most of which was paid back, but part of which Mr. Becker has testified that was done with her permission to help him with his gambling addiction. He took money out of her account to pay Vegas casinos $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 at a crack, adding up to $200,000, $300,000.
This was with the permission of his 91-year-old aunt.
I understand that's what the board does not like.
All the credibility there, as you might imagine.
Yes, there is. But he had, just like his nephew, he had taken care of his aunt for 20 years, done everything for her, the only family member that took care of her. He did all of her issues, took care of all of her money all that time. He, in both cases in these guardianships, even though he was taking money in and out, they ended up with more money than they started with because of his judicious work with investments and other things that he did.
And then he lent money inappropriately from these guardianships?
And this is one thing I should point out. In the first guardianship with his nephew, it was not inappropriate. And counsel has already conceded that. He did it according to statute on an in-state mortgage. All right? That was back in the 90s maybe. There's no other claim that Mr. Becker had any problems in those early years. Mr. Becker's problems started with gambling addiction in about 2002, 2004 through there. That's when he also took a little more money out of his nephew's account, paid it back, and started taking money from his aunt's accounts and then from her estate. Have I answered your question?
Okay. You're well into your rebuttal time.
I do have it still, or not?
You've got a minute and a half left.
I'll keep that if I may. Thank you.
Mr. Caligari.
May it please the court, Chief Justice O'Connor, distinguished members of this court, my name is Joseph Caligari. I represent the Office of Disciplinary Counsel in this matter. In its 30-page report, there is one line that sums up this case perfectly. In paragraph 107 of the board's report, the board stated that the respondent was systematic, almost meticulous, in stealing what he needed to support his habit and in covering his tracks, all the while remaining remarkably unconcerned about the results of his actions or those who would be harmed. That's what this case is about.
Mr. Caligiuri, would you comment on the self-reporting? Because counsel mentioned that a couple of times to us.
Sure. The respondent throughout the proceedings has stated that he self-reported. And in a technical sense, he did. His report came in before anyone else did. But it should be given very little weight by this court, as the board noted. Respondent's self-report happened after he was caught by his law firm, and they basically put the ultimatum to him. You either report or we're going to do it ourselves. And he filed a report at that point in time. Respondent's depth, the depth of respondent's deception in this case, knew no limits. He stole from his developmentally disabled nephew, his 91-year-old aunt, as the Chief Justice noted, a trusting brother, an unsuspecting cousin, a client, and the members of his firm. That is why respondent must be disbarred. Before I address some of what the respondent brought up in his argument, I'd like to just point out relator's sole objection to the board's report. The board dismissed relator's allegations charging an 8.4C conduct involving fraud, dishonesty, deceit, or misrepresentation based upon Mr. Becker's theft of his law firm funds. And this court has held many times that theft of law firm funds does constitute a violation of 8.4C or 1102A4 under the old rules. In this case, during the hearing, Mr. Becker stipulated that between 2007 and 2010, he systematically took funds from clients, and rather than running them through his law firm account, he kept them for himself, thus depriving his firm of those funds. And he used those funds to gamble or pay gambling debts. Now, it only amounted to $3,000, but the fact of the matter is, it was a theft. He stole the money, plain and simple. So that's relator's sole objection to the board's otherwise.
Is the stipulation in writing that you're referring to?
Your Honor, they actually did it orally during the hearing. The parties got together and stipulated.
On the record?
On
is
the
there
record.
A transcript
yes, it's in
of
the
it?
Transcript. Yes.
All right. Do you know where that would be?
It's probably around, probably about 100, page 170, somewhere around there.
Thank you.
It's towards the end of respondent's cross-examination.
Thank you.
Counsel, can you clarify too, your friends on the other side said that you conceded that mortgage that went to the secretary, that was not a violation.
Well, yes, I can address that, Your Honor. We never really were alleging that a first mortgage on someone's property was a problem, was a disciplinary violation. Our intent and what we alleged in the complaint was that the self-dealing nature of that loan to his secretary was the problem. He loaned his secretary $63,000 so she could build a home. A year into that loan, the respondent decided, hey, I don't want to be part of this loan anymore. I want my money back. So what he did was he engineered a transaction by taking his disabled nephew's funds out of the guardianship and lent it to his secretary, who then paid Mr. Becker back immediately. That was the issue. We weren't really concerned, neither was the board, with whether or not he had a first mortgage on someone's property. So that was the issue in that case. One of the major issues that respondent has brought up is his gambling addiction. And there is no doubt that he has a gambling addiction. But there are two things we should keep in mind. First, not all the misconduct in this case resulted from his gambling addiction. In fact, as Justice French just pointed out, that loan was part of something separate and apart from his gambling. He wasn't in the throes of his addiction when he did that loan, engineered that transaction to repay himself the money that he had lent to his secretary. Also, he loaned his daughter $30,800 out of that same guardianship before he was addicted to gambling. So we have misconduct here separate and apart from the gambling. But it is true that a huge portion of the case does involve his gambling addiction. And there's no doubt he is a compulsive gambler. The problem is the respondent has not shown any interest in obtaining treatment for his disorder. His own psychologist testified at this hearing that he should remain on Paxil, a medication that respondent himself said it was helping him. He quit taking Paxil. He said he should enroll in Gamblers Anonymous. He did for 3 months in 2010 and he quit, stating it wasn't effective. He signed an OLAP contract. He quit the OLAP contract saying it wasn't a good fit for him. The only therapy that respondent is undertaking right now is what his counsel testified to a minute ago, and that's staying away from money. His theory goes, if I don't have money, I won't gamble. Well, there is no way we can protect the public from a compulsive gambler because a lawyer will always be around money. And as one of the respondents' mentors, I believe, might be too strong of a term, but he cites a gentleman from Michigan that has authored extensively on gambling, and they said if there's money around, a compulsive gambler will use it to gamble, end of story. So respondent has shown no interest in obtaining treatment, no interest in getting better. In 3 years, since October 2010, he has only seen his counselor 8 times. His counselor also told him to get a therapist in Florida. Has he done it? No. So the respondent has taken no ownership, even since this hearing. His counsel testified today, he still hasn't sought treatment. He's not serious about his recovery. He shouldn't be afforded a chance to come back to the practice of law.
What weight should we give to the fact that he has not gambled for 3 years? I mean, this has been episodic. How much money do you calculate was involved in this?
At least $200,000 from his aunt's estate, and then another $115,000 from his nephew, and approximately another $16,000 from the firm and his one client, Mr. Festa.
But that's at least 3 years ago.
Yes, that's true.
And there hasn't been any episodes or incidents since then, to your knowledge?
Not to my knowledge, but he's living in Florida, and he has been living in Florida for some period of time. He's not practicing law, so he's not around money. But I would state, I don't know whether or not Mr. Becker has gambled in the past 3 years. All I can tell you is this is coming from a man that stood up at the hearing and testified that his 91-year-old aunt, who he characterized as a penny pincher and frugal and not a gambler, allowed him to deplete her life savings to pay off his gambling debts. This is after there was testimony from his trusted friend and confidant, Blaine Brock, on October 15, 2010, stating that the respondent himself admitted that he stole the money from his aunt, that he did not have permission, and that he had reduced, by stealing that money, had reduced the beneficiary shares. His friend, Mr. Brock, would not have made this up. This was a surreal experience for the people. They thought Mr. Becker was in such a state at that point in time, they were worried about whether he was going to kill himself. They remember that conversation verbatim. So I don't know whether he's gambled, but I don't think we can trust everything Mr. Becker says. So I would simply ask that the court uphold the board's recommendation and permanently disbar the respondent. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, you have under a minute and a half.
I do have to address just a couple of facts. Counsel just said Mr. Becker is not practicing law. I already told you he is winding up some cases. He still has 2 more cases to wind up. He has been around money a little bit, but with the support of his wife, he's had no problem with gambling for 3 years, none whatsoever. And no other clients have come forward in this past 3 years or since self-reporting either. That's one item. I just can't believe it. They're saying he's not practicing. Also, they say that he depleted his aunt's savings. That's not accurate. Look at the records that are in the exhibits. He ended up doing what he said his aunt told him to do, and that is reserve $300,000 from his estate. So each of the niece could get $100,000, and so would Steve. He did that. He didn't deplete all of her money. He took some of it, he said, with permission, but he didn't deplete all of it. Counsel makes,
you know, counsel,
Mr. Becker.
Counsel, let me just make an observation here. Usually when we hear these type of cases, we have a litany of doctor's reports and psychologists and OLAP and all sorts of supporting testimony that the attorney has put their life on the straight and narrow, and there's testimony that they have proved that that they have beat the addiction, and but it will be a lifelong struggle, all that sort of stuff. And yet you come to us and say, if he gets the opportunity, in other words, he gets an indefinite suspension, and then there's conditions with that indefinite suspension, then we're going to talk about addressing this. And you say his self-help over the last 3 years and his wife's help is proof that he is, dealing with this addiction. Nothing could be further from the truth, considering the type of evidence that other attorneys have brought forth successfully, I might add. And you're asking us, on a leap of faith, to say that he will, in some way, treat this addiction professionally if he's given the opportunity to retain his license with light at the end of the tunnel to be able to practice again. When he has rejected the help of OLAP, he's rejected the medications that were suggested, as well as the frequency of professional help. So I'm at a loss as to why we should deviate from what is case law in this area and not disbar your client.
I think I've tried to address that so far, and we recognize that that would be a problem for Mr. Becker. That's why when he does come back, he needs to have his support group in place. No question about it.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement.
May I just real briefly, you mentioned what you've done in other cases. I would like to note those cases that have come before the court because I think they should be looked at. Justice Lasinger just wrote a dissenting opinion in a similar case. They are pretty much already before you, so I probably don't need to bring your attention to those similar cases to Mr. Becker's, particularly those that involve gambling addiction. May I do it just real briefly, or should I do it in writing for you instead?
We already are much aware of those cases.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshal, will you adjourn court, please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.